Ben Bernanke's struggles with the economy and his colleagues.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, our look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. We'll tell you how internal debate at the Federal Reserve could affect the recovery after we ask, where's Wall Street? But after yesterday's huge gains, the Dow is up a more modest 13 points this morning at 10,282. That's a gain of about 10%. A tenth of a percent. Big difference there. The Nasdaq and the S&P 500 are up about a quarter of a percent. Costco is up 1.5%. That big retailer reports same-store sales were up 7% in August compared to last year. In fact, several big retailers reported on sales this morning, and overall, they beat expectations. Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke is testifying this morning to the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission about the meltdown of 2008, but the man has his hands full here in 2010. Economist Diane Swonk of Mesirow Financial joins us live each Thursday from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
What is Mr. Bernanke's next move?
Well, I think his next move will be to expand the balance sheet and further stimulate, but it'll be highly contingent on things like tomorrow's employment report, which I think will be another disappointing number. We've seen a lot of disappointing data out there, and this is a chairman that's made clear he will do everything he can in his power to avert a double-dip recession.
Well, you mentioned expanding what the Fed is doing. It's been a matter of internal debate. You know Ben Bernanke. You were at his symposium in Jackson Hole last week. How's he holding up?
You know, I think this is a very difficult time. We're in uncharted waters, economic waters. There's no precedent for what we're doing. And in that kind of environment, smart people disagree. The disagreements within the Federal Reserve about what to do next go deep. And there's a very badly divided Fed. And he's going to have to corral what are not just cats, it looks like lions now, to get the next move he wants to make out of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, there's been, we just have a few seconds here, but there's been a little, would you say, disloyalty around him?
I think that there was a lot of disloyalty around him, and I think that, you know, although smart people disagree, there's ways to do it in respectful ways, and there's ways to do it in disrespectful ways, and I think Ben Bernanke's had a rough couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Diane Swonk of Mesirow Financial, thanks. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Last year's tax on British bankers' bonuses failed. That is what the UK's former finance minister, Alistair Darling, says, and he's the one who came up with the idea. From London, Christopher Worth reports attempts to trim bonus pay may be stalling.
The UK's one-time 50% tax was intended to curb the kind of big payouts many say led to the risky behavior that caused the financial crisis. Jan Randolph watches the banking industry for IHS Global Insight.
It seems that, you know, if you want to get to the root of the problem, you're going to have to do much more than just provide an annual tax. And all it's done is provide a little bit more revenue for the government. It hasn't fundamentally changed incentives and behavior.
The British government raked in around $3 billion from the tax this year. But with continued public anger over bank bonuses, the former UK Treasury chief says other, more severe measures could be in store if banks don't change their bonus culture. For now, that doesn't seem to be happening. Credit Suisse gave out a round of surprise bonuses in London this week, and there's speculation that investment banks in the U.S. may give out bonuses a month earlier this year to avoid possible taxes being discussed in Congress. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
Have you found yourself cutting back on your grocery purchases, yet you're still splurging on your pet's food? It's a common practice lately and an understandable one. Marketplace's Adrian Hill joins us now to consider the financial and environmental costs of your beloved animal. Morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
So let's start with what it costs to keep a dog.
It's not cheap to keep a dog, as dog owners out there probably already know. But let's assume that public radio listeners are into rescue dogs. According to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, depending on the size of your dog, you might spend about $1,300 in that first year for the dog. Food, grooming, all those things, vet costs. And again, that's if you're planning to adopt a dog. If you buy new, you're going to pay more.
Wow. Now, let's continue the never-ending argument over cats versus dogs. I'm going to guess a cat. I'm going to guess a cat would be cheaper. Yes?
Cats are cheaper. Cats run about $1,000 the first year you have it. But again, not cheap overall.
Okay, now what about your pet's environmental footprint or paw print?
I was in touch with a woman named Brenda Vale who wrote a book called Time to Eat the Dog, The Real Guide to Sustainable Living, to find out what the least environmentally and most environmentally friendly pets are. It turns out at the top of the bad for the environment list is also the most expensive pet, and that's the big dog. My sister has a Mastiff mix. She's fostering right now, so she probably doesn't want to hear this.
No, she's on the list, huh? So what is the best pet for the environment?
Any guesses?
I'm thinking something ceramic that eats very little.
Eats nothing at
all. I don't know, a little gerbil?
It's actually a goldfish.
Goldfish. Okay.
Humble goldfish. As Brenda Vale put it, it's vegetarian, it is cold-blooded, and it's small.
So maybe your sister maybe consider a fish?
She's probably not going to give up her dogs. My sister loves the cuddliness and playfulness of the dogs. But if you're out there thinking about a pet, a goldfish is good for the environment and cheaper. A fish is only about $200 a year.
Good to know. Marketplace's Adrienne Hill, thank you.
Thanks.
And finally, one of the biggest YouTube videos of all time is now a commercial. 13 million people have watched a Yosemite hiker discover a
double rainbow all the way across the sky.
Yes. Now, that hiker, Paul Vasquez, had trouble fitting the entire double rainbow onto the video screen, which leads us to his new ad for Microsoft's video editing software.
With Windows Live Photo Gallery, you can use Photo Stitch to combine adjacent photos and capture that double rainbow the way it should be captured, full on, all the way across the sky.
What does it mean?
A sad commercialization of his innocent joy or a brilliant marketing move? Or both? In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. I'm tweeting at Bill Radke Radio, and you can download our Midday Update podcast at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.